This episode of New Politics was released on the 16th of April, 2022, and produced on the land of the Wangal and Whadjuk people.
Welcome to New Politics. In this episode, the end of the first week of the campaign, and we look at all the big issues in federal politics and the mainstream media behaving badly. I'm Eddie Djokovic, editor of New Politics.
I'm David Lewis, the official cash rate.
And a big thank you to our new Patreon subscribers. Thanks for signing up. And if you'd like to support New Politics, you can support us through a Patreon subscription. It's just $5 per month for the Ruby Standard supporter level or $10 per month for the Gold Standard supporter level. But whether it's a subscription or if you just want to listen in, read our material online or buy a t-shirt or buy a book, it's all available at newpolitics.com.au. And all of this is a good way to support independent journalism. Last week, we talked about the idea of Scott Morrison entering the campaign in the worst possible shape, but Anthony Albanese actually started off the campaign in the worst possible way. It was quite a hostile first media conference in the marginal seat of Bass in Tasmania, and he couldn't answer, or he gave the wrong answers to two questions from a journalist. What's the Reserve Bank's cash rate, and what is the official unemployment rate? It was a classic gotcha strategy employed by the media, and it seemed like a coordinated questioning tactic from those journalists in attendance, and they ended up getting the headline that they were after, and it guaranteed negative headlines for Albanese for the next few days, and it's likely to be something that comes up frequently in the election campaign over the next 6 weeks. All of this is primarily a mainstream media strategy to derail Labor's agenda. They've done it before and they'll do it again. And Anthony Albanese should have known those figures or at least had a strategy in place to deal with this issue. But was it fair questioning from the media or just a part of the political process that all leaders need to be prepared for, especially during an election campaign?
The Prime Minister was castigated a few weeks back for not knowing the price of a litre of milk. And I think this probably demonstrated a little bit more than not knowing the cash rate. Very few of the journalists asking that question knew what the cash rate was, and they don't even know what it refers to. The cash rate is the interest paid on Australian money. The Reserve Bank wants it at about 0.1%. They actually have no control over it. It's set by the market. It's currently at 0.06%. I think the question also asked the official cash rate. There is no official cash rate because it's set by the market. There is official interest rates, which are set by the Reserve Bank. And so your official Reserve Bank interest rates are in fact different to other banks' interest rates, which may or may not be valid, but they're not set by the Reserve Bank.
Oh, well, I'm actually quite bemused by these gotcha questions. They're an absolute nuisance. It's similar to trolling on the internet, but it's part of the game of politics. And journalists, for some strange reason, they want to keep showing that they lack the intellect to ask the deeper questions, and they just look for the trick question to catch a leader out. Scott Morrison was asked the price of milk a few weeks ago, as you referred to, and now Anthony Albanese has asked a similar type of question.
What's the national unemployment rate?
National unemployment rate at the moment is... I think it's 5.4, I'm not sure what it is.
So that was Anthony Albanese's response, but he should have given the response that Adam Bandt from the Australian Greens gave when he was asked a similar question at the National Press Club.
Talking of abject fact-checking exercises, you said in the speech that wages growth wasn't going particularly well. What's the current WPI?
Well... Google it, mate. I mean, like, I am sick. If you want to know, if you want to know why people are turning off politics, it's because what happens when you have an election that increasingly becomes this basic fact-checking exercise between a government that deserves to be turfed out and an opposition that's got no vision. This is what happens. Like, elections should be about a contest of ideas. Politics should be about reaching for the stars and offering a better society. And instead, there's these questions that are asked about, can you tell us this particular stat or can you tell us that particular stat? And those questions are designed to show that politicians are somehow out of touch and not representative of everyday people. Well, newsflash, most of the people in Canberra are on six-figure salaries just passing time until they go out and work for their coal and gas corporations and get a six- or seven-figure lobbying job. Do you know what would be a better way of showing? Do you know what would be a better way of showing that politicians are in touch with the need of everyday peoples? It would be passing laws that lift the minimum wage. It would be making dental and mental into Medicare. It would be making sure that we wipe student debt and build affordable houses. And when you've got wages growing at about 2% and inflation growing at about 3.5%, that is part of the problem. And I would hope that at this election, we can lift the standard and turn it into a genuine contest of ideas.
Your profit tax.
Now, there's no question that Albanese should have been able to recall those numbers. He probably did know, but under the pressure of the first media conference, just couldn't get those numbers out. But there probably should have been a strategy to deal with this kind of incident, which is inevitably going to happen during a campaign. When Scott Morrison is asked a question like that, if he doesn't know, he'll have a quick-fire response. He'll say something like, well, whatever the number is, it's going to be much lower under the Liberal Party, and then ends the questioning and then moves on. Albanese could have said something like, well, hang on a minute, I don't want to give you the wrong answer. Looked it up on his phone, or he could have asked Katie Gallagher, who was actually standing right next to him, to give him those figures. It would have looked awkward and a little bit clumsy, but it would have avoided 2 days of drama. And I was actually quite surprised that this happened in this particular way. Politicians of all persuasions do their media training. They do their war gaming and simulation training, where they get the staffers to fire away the trick questions to catch their leader off guard, and they simulate a real media conference. But maybe there wasn't enough of that, or maybe it was just first day nerves for Anthony Albanese.
It might end up humanising him a bit. I think what it didn't do was lower the contempt the electorate feels for Scott Morrison. I think there was a lot of, I should have known that, and what's happening there. So there may be a few independents who gain, people who might have gone to Labor and thinking, oh, look, their leader doesn't know, so, and there's no way I'm voting for Morrison. So we might get some of those independents, both the ones we've interviewed and the ones we're going to interview. Some of them may get a boost. Again, memories can be short for this type of thing. John Howard initially said that it wasn't important. He himself got the official interest rate wrong early in the 2007 campaign. There were a few people who tried to draw the conclusion that Howard lost in 2007. But again, he could have got the answer exactly right. And I don't think it would have moved one seat for him. It wasn't a good look and probably fed into a general air of it's time for him to go. I remember John Kerrin, and he couldn't say what GDP meant. And there were a few terms that as treasurer he stumbled over and was asking the journalists what they meant. That was a bad look. That was a man who hadn't prepared. And he hadn't prepared because Keating had stepped down as treasurer and he had been thrown into the job. But the electorate doesn't care about that so much. They just wanted to see someone who looked competent and capable. And even those who hated Keating as treasurer conceded that he was an exceptionally good communicator on what seemed to be complex economic issues. It was his communication that, in a sense, was his undoing. Phrases like the recession we had to have, after he'd explained why that recession was needed economically, were used as ammunition against him for many years and still gets brought up.
Now, I don't want to harp on about this for too much because the election campaign is much bigger than the leader forgetting two numbers to start off their campaign, but it's also a question of media management. And I was thinking, who in the Labor Party organised a media conference where every man, woman and their dog was just allowed to come along and ask endless questions? And I had a close look at that footage of Albanese's first media conference, and there were about 20 journalists and also their respective camera crews and boom microphones. They were all shouting out questions and demanding answers. And Albanese and Katie Gallagher just looked absolutely flummoxed by all of these persistent questions. It looked a little bit like mayhem. So there was question after question after question until Albanese relented and couldn't give the media the answers that they wanted to hear. And I know that there's quite a few Labor staffers that listen into New Politics, but God, you know, lift your game. Whoever organised that media conference, fire them and get someone else. And we'd be available, of course, but the Labor Party probably couldn't afford our hefty fees for strategy and media advice, David. But they've had 3.5 years of looking at Scott Morrison close up. He's the master of media deflection. Learn from the master. At best, Morrison has around 3 or 4 hand-picked journalists coming along to his media events. It's all carefully controlled. Morrison answers one question, he lies or deflects, tells the journalist to shut up, and then he moves on to the next question and then keeps repeating this cycle. And sometimes less is more. Just copy what Morrison does. Don't give the media what they want. Treat them like the fools that they are and start controlling the media cycle. That's how you win an election campaign. You don't win an election by giving these journalists the respect that they've done absolutely nothing to deserve.
There's something wrong in the communications team, whether it's there's a high turnover because it's very high pressure because they're up against an almost indomitable force of Murdoch, whether it's just young people who are trying to straddle the old media and the new media and finding it hard to get the balance, whether it's seat warmers, I really don't know. Certainly, it's been a problem since probably 2013 in that Labor has some really phenomenally good members of parliament, but the message just doesn't get out. And again, we can't underestimate the power of a almost duopoly between Murdoch and Fairfax, who are by both nature and existence anti-Labor. That's really hard. And I don't want to slam anyone too hard about this because from the outside, it's actually hard to see what the balance is of circumstance and means to improve. But certainly they've got to sit down and work out how to handle the media better because the country can't afford another 3 years of Morrison's cronyism.
And Scott Morrison also hosted a private drinks function for the travelling media at the Nepean Rowing Club in Western Sydney, and I've been there. It's actually quite a good location. And it was gatecrashed by Addison Wright, who wanted to ask a few questions of Scott Morrison.
ScoMo, can I ask you? I just wanted to say hi. I'm pretty astounded as a young bloke here. Good to see you. Can I get a photo?
Sure.
Is that all right?
Are you in the press pack, are you?
No.
Oh, right.
No, I'm a local, live up in the mountains. So,
okay.
Can I ask one question?
Yeah, sure.
One question. Yeah, I'm just up in the mountains, so I came down today. I just got... Yeah, one of my mate works behind the bar, he said.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah.
I just wanted to ask one question, ScoMo. Look, across the room, I hope you don't mind, I'm just recording.
What's going on there? No, why is it recording?
Oh, I just want to ask you a question.
Mate, I'm sorry, this is a private event.
Oh, well, sorry about that.
This is a media. Well, I'm hosting some drinks for the media event.
I just want to ask a question.
Sorry, what's going on?
ScoMo, across the river here, across the Nepean River, People lost their houses, and they were burnt. What are you going to do, detain me?
So that was angry Scott Morrison behind the scenes, and that's a sight that is very well hidden from the public view. During the last campaign, Scott Morrison held a private screening of Game of Thrones. Free drinks and food was served up to the journalists in attendance. Anthony Albanese also hosted free drinks for the media during the week, but as far as we can tell, he didn't abuse anyone or throw anyone out of the pub. Now, many journalists have been defending the criticism that they've been receiving about these types of private drinks events with politicians, saying that it's always been like this and it doesn't influence their reporting or their commentary. But they might have said that under the influence of alcohol or in between snorting some cocaine in the bathrooms. But as far as I'm concerned, it's just not on. We wouldn't expect to see doctors going out drinking with their patients or teachers going out drinking with their students or psychiatrists going out to lunch with their clients. Should political journalists be socialising in this way with the Prime Minister, or is all of this above board and just a natural part of politics?
Of course they shouldn't. Something like the National Press Club is probably okay in that they get to do the job, but having private drinks is not okay, and it's never been okay, and all governments have done it. And I know that governments do it to try and soften their image and what have you, but journalists shouldn't be put into that. journalists should be just neutral, analytic, and separate from politics. Yes, interview them, and interview them hard. Interview them fair, but don't go out for drinks after. Don't be friends with them. This is harder. Don't marry them or go out with them. That's a harder thing to control because the heart wants what it wants and all of that. But there needs to be a professional distance. Otherwise, what's the point? You're not doing journalism. You become a courtier, and nobody wants that, not even the journalist.
Well, we might be a little bit miserable about that because we weren't invited to these private drinks either by Scott Morrison or Anthony Albanese, but I can assure you that that's not actually the case. But all of these issues that we've been looking at for the first few days of the campaign and the media behaviour, as appalling and as unfair as it might be, these are the rules of Australian politics and Australian political reporting. We've got very low standards of political journalism, and that was clearly on display during the week, but that's just how it is, and it's not going to change during the course of this election campaign. Now, I'm not expecting the media to just be one-sided propagandists for the Labor Party, and I wouldn't want them to be that. All I want is for them to be at least fair in their treatment of both sides of politics. And just about everything about the Morrison government is inept, it's corrupt, divisive, and incompetent. But this is the side of politics that the media generally supports. And of course they should scrutinise the Labor Party. And of course they should ask Albanese some difficult questions on policy matters.
Of course, yes.
Not some stupid gotcha questions to produce headline propaganda, but they're essentially a cheer squad for the Liberal Party, and that's the way that it's always been. I wish that it was different, but unfortunately, that's the way that it is, and it's not going to be any different until we see some fundamental changes in the way that the media operates in this country, and that goes for News Limited, it goes for Nine Media, Ten Media, Seven West, and the ABC increasingly. They're absolutely mediocre in general, but unfortunately, that's what we're going to get over the next 6 weeks of this election campaign.
Yes, it's appalling, and they should know better. That's all you can say. And of course, they don't know better. I know that there are veterans of the press gallery who are appalled at what they see as the laziness. None of the journalists, or very few of them, live in Canberra. They just fly in and fly out. None of them do any of the work. They just wait around waiting for leaks or press releases from the politicians, and then don't analyse them and don't push them and prod them in ways that they should. Now, I can't say that there's ever been a golden age in Australian journalism. We've had good journalists and we still have good journalists. Don't get me wrong, it's not everyone. But it's a shame that some of the ones getting the notice are the ones who aren't actually doing the work. I get hope when I see younger journalists come through and actually look and analyze, and I don't always agree with them, but if I can see analysis, if I can see an attempt to look at the idea rather than the substance of the idea, rather than just the superficiality of the idea, that's always a good thing. And it doesn't matter who it is doing it, as long as they're doing it. And yeah, there are, I know too, some journalists who were invited and refused to go. There were other journalists who were pointedly not invited, which, again, that shouldn't be a thing. You speak to all legitimate media sources, not just the ones who are in the press gallery, but people like us too, who should be expected to ask you hard but fair questions. And the Prime Minister gets angry because he doesn't get a lot of it, and it catches him off guard far more. Whereas Anthony Albanese answers every question. He allows the follow-ups, and he doesn't cut things short, whereas the Prime Minister does. I don't know how aware the public is of that, but it's being noticed by certain people. And it's really one of the things that he shouldn't do. He should be open to scrutiny. And it's a government that doesn't like scrutiny. Whether the Labor Party likes it or not remains to be seen. But at least Albanese and the rest of them are allowing it at the moment. And that's a difference. And that's an important difference.
You're listening to New Politics. You can subscribe to us on Apple or Google Podcasts, listen through YouTube, SoundCloud and Amazon Music, or find us at newpolitics.com.au, and you can now support New Politics through Patreon.
I'm never gonna give
Elections are not won or lost on the first day of the campaign, even though that's what many in the mainstream media seem to be suggesting. The first week is almost over, it's Easter and school holidays, and there's still a long way to go. New opinion polls, essentially created just before the campaign started, they haven't shifted. News poll was more or less the same as its previous survey, a slight dip in Labor support, and the Morgan poll had absolutely no change at all. It's 57% for Labor and 43% for the Coalition. The Labor Party has to pick up 7 seats to form government, and the Coalition just needs to make sure that it doesn't have any net losses to hold on to government. Opinion polls suggest that there's a change of government that could occur. I guess we'll find out in 6 weeks' time. But an inspection of the seat-by-seat analysis does also suggest that it's still a difficult election for Labor to win, despite all the mayhem and division that's been happening within the Coalition. But elections are always based on more than just the one issue or the recall of one or two statistics, and there's still a number of factors that will determine the outcome of this election.
Yeah, we haven't seen Morrison's gaffes, although the last few Liberal Party campaigns have been gaff-filled, and they've still won. Again, I think that they're losing the seat-by-seat war of attrition that they've been very good at the last couple of elections. They're not as good as that anymore because there's nowhere to hide. In a war of attrition, you need to be able to hide, otherwise you just get hit by the enemy, and they haven't been able to do that so far. Of course, there's still 5 weeks of this.
Oh, of course, but a few people have asked us, well, is the election over for Labor? Well, absolutely not. Whatever happens on day one, the Labor Party just has to forget about that and focus on the things that they want to talk about and all of those issues that are strongly resonating within the community, and that's climate change, the cost of living pressures, wage stagnation, there's the lack of action for bushfire and flood victims, there's Medicare, there's women's safety, there's the failures in vaccination rollout, there's the failures in quarantine measures, there's the incompetence, there's the corruption, there's all the rorting. I could go on and on and on and on. Labor just has to keep hammering away at these issues. Keep hammering away. Stop trying to be so nice to the media. Start hammering away at them too, because it's not just the Liberal National Coalition that they're up against. They're also up against the mainstream media, who will do them absolutely no favours at all and will work against their interests as well. And you can see that the media feels that now that the election has been called, it's almost like a clean slate for both sides. And they'll forget about the poor behaviour of the Liberal National Coalition, not just over the past 3 years, but also over the past 9 years, and make it seem like that's all in the past and it's just never existed. Well, it's not. It's in the here and the now. And Labor is the one that has to keep pushing this during the election campaign, and they need to keep doing it every single day until the election is finally over.
Exactly. It's a game of little victories that you're not going to win all of them, but you have to win more of them than you lose. You put the losses, and this is true for the Liberal Party as well, you put the losses behind you and hope to win the next one and hope that the losses don't build up, which is usually how election campaigns go.
Well, I guess it's also a case where you have to put those little victories behind you as well and just focus on whatever's coming up next. So win or lose, just whatever happened the day before or 2 days before, you just put that out of your mind and focus on what's happening the next day. And it's an accumulation of all of these different events during an election campaign. That's what finally ends up winning the election campaign overall. But generally, just as a comparison of the different treatments that are given to the different sides of politics, it has been revealed that a $500,000 payment has been made to Rachel Miller. And she was the Liberal Party staffer to Minister Alan Tudge. They were having an affair where she claimed that she was bullied in the office of Alan Tudge and also Michaela Cash. And she also alleged that she was emotionally and physically abused by Alan Tudge towards the end of the relationship. Morrison has been asked questions about this, but all he says is that it's a private matter. And the questioning stops, and that's the end of the issue. Now, these are the sort of issues that the media should be hounding a politician on, not on the price of milk or the Reserve Bank cash rate or the official unemployment rate. $500,000 of taxpayers' money has been paid for reasons that we don't know about. Is it hush money? Is it to remove an issue during an election campaign? And for Morrison to just say that it's a private matter, and then for the media to just accept that, well, that's just not good enough. This is the behaviour of a criminal gang or a cartel. Just throw money around to shut people up and get them out of the picture. It's totally unacceptable.
Tudge is a particularly despicable member of the parliament, and there's no reason not to believe the victim in this case. And certainly she deserves to be compensated, but he also deserves to wear some consequences. In fact, he deserves to wear all the consequences. I don't know if that includes prison time, because I'm not a lawyer. Maybe some of our legal friends can sort that out. But I do know he's not fit to be in Parliament, let alone be a minister. And when Scott Morrison told us that he had either stepped down or had been sacked from the cabinet, that was obviously meant to distract. Now, apparently, someone else is doing the job, but he is still in cabinet. So he's being paid at a cabinet minister's rate when he should be, at the very most, a backbencher. And in fact, he really should have stepped down from his seat and they should have had the by-election. Again, I don't know whether what he's done legally remains in civil law or criminal law. I should think criminal law. But the point is that his being there doesn't help anybody, least of all himself. And I guess all we can do is hope that he loses his seat and that the people in his seat are angered enough that they mete out the consequence in that way, which isn't quite enough, but it'll be something.
Well, I guess it's also a question of, well, what do you need to do to be sacked as a minister in the Morrison government? So we had Susan Ley. She was stood down for rorting some of her travel expenses a few years ago. After the election, she put it back in as a minister. We also had Bridget McKenzie, who was sacked during this term, and then she reappears as a minister 6 to 12 months later. So, Tudge, well, is he a minister or is he not a minister? It's been made very unclear as to what his actual status is, but there are no consequences for anything that you do within this government.
Yeah. When Bridget McKenzie was taken out of her ministry, she remained leader of the House and on chair of a few committees. So she managed to keep most of the money she was earning and all of the standing she had. It's just awful. It really is. I suppose, let's be fair, he can use that as an excuse of how he's actually pro-woman, but I don't think that's the example he'd want to give in all seriousness.
Now, just back to the election campaign, because that's a big issue that's going on at the moment. But there were different events from the leaders. Labor held a rally for the Australian Nursery and Midwifery Federation in Melbourne, and it looks like they've put their stumbles behind them. And they also reduced their media conference afterwards to just 8 minutes. And wasn't the media very unhappy about that, announcing to the world that Albanese had broken a promise to the media that he'd answer every question from the media? Well, that's actually a lie promoted by journalists at Channel 10. He never actually made that promise, and who cares if he did or didn't, and if he breaks that promise, and why would he make that promise to journalists anyway? And I have to tell this to political journalists. Guess what? The election isn't about you. It's about the Australian public, and it's time to get your heads around this basic fact. And Morrison, on the other hand, he's been on the campaign trail, of course, business as usual. He announced a $250 million cash injection for oil refineries, and of course, oil companies are the biggest donors to the Liberal Party. He also dumped his plans to introduce a federal anti-corruption commission, and that was promised all the way back in December 2018. Not too many questions from the media about that, and Morrison's just blamed Labor for not having a federal anti-corruption commission. And then he went on to a factory in Western Sydney with the Liberal MP, Melissa McIntosh, to do a few photo opportunities on a sewing machine. I've got no idea why he would have done that, but no complaints from the media. They got exactly what they were after. Morrison got to give some payback to his supporters and his vested interests. There's no anti-corruption commission, but the media got their photo of Morrison on a sewing machine. Not sure how that helps the Reserve Bank cash rate or the official unemployment rate, but the media got what they wanted. Everyone's happy. Time to move on.
Excellent. One of the things that is a recurring theme of our podcast is the continual inappropriate behaviour of the government. The Westminster system was set up a couple of centuries ago, and they're just trashing the lot of it. Ministers have to be held to a higher standard. I know there's a debate over whether sports people should be held to a higher standard, but most sports people aren't on government money, aren't paid by the people to behave properly. They're paid by the people to play the sport. And that becomes problematic when they act in appalling ways, of course, because they're role models to kids, role models to other people, role models to adults too. Politicians don't have to be role models as such, but they do have to be held to a higher standard. And one of the things I hope a new Labor government brings, or a new hung parliament with a Labour majority or a Greens majority or whomever, I hope brings in is a return to the standards expected of people.
And we've probably focused a little bit too much on the media today, but their behaviour has to be called out as much as political leaders need to be called out on. But there's one fascinating dynamic that's being played out at the moment, and David, you referred to this before, but it's a dynamic that I have not seen before, and that's journalists that have started attacking each other. And it's almost like a battle between legacy media and new independent media. But journalists such as Paul Bongiorno and Barry Cassidy and Bernard Keane from Crikey.com, they've started having a go at journalists such as Andrew Probyn at the ABC, claiming that the ABC is being cowed by the government and just pushing through government talking points and not upholding journalistic ethics and standards. Now, many people through social media have been saying this for years and years and years. David, you and I have been saying it for a long, long time as well, pointing out that the quality of mainstream political journalism is abysmal, pointless, and protecting vested interests in this country and doing more damage to the political fabric. And also claiming that the ABC is effectively being controlled by the government to suit its narrative and its political agenda. Now, in the past, all of this has been dismissed as trolling and just a collection of disaffected anarchists on the internet with nothing better to do with their time. But when you start getting the experienced journalists starting to point out all of the errors of the mainstream media and claiming that they're effectively running a protection racket for the government and have actually lost their way, it was probably time for more people to start listening to what's being said about this.
Yeah, exactly. It's so bizarre because usually it's somewhat of a closed shop and you'd have journalists argue with each other, but they'd protect each other. And whether it's social media and the pressures of not being in that privileged position that they had, yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I think that old media is starting to feel the pressure from new media. The budgets are lower. The work is less. There's a lot less detail going into the work. There's a lot more competition from other areas. And I think that there are some journalists who probably shouldn't be journalists or who haven't grown in the role enough, who can't handle it and who don't recognise that the role as it was defined for them is changing and they won't be able to hold on to the role as they were able to do it.
That's it for this episode of New Politics. Thanks for listening in. If you'd like to support our style of journalism and commentary, please make a donation at our website at newpolitics.com.au. We don't beg, plead, beseech or gaslight you about journalism coming to an end. We just keep it very simple. If you like what we do, please send some support our way. It keeps our commitment to independent journalism ticking along. I'm Eddie Djokovic. Thanks for listening in and it's goodbye to our listeners.
I'm David Lewis. We'll see you next time.